The government's response to Ebola will get another look from Congress, but that look won't be for a while, and it won't be from a health oversight committee. The Senate Appropriations Committee will look at Ebola November 6th after the congressional elections. David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call, hosts the Hawkins Here blog, and he is looking at Congress's oversight of Ebola. This just struck me as not odd, but just it was kind of one of those things that when I read it, David, I went, huh, because Darrell Issa, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, is holding a hearing about Ebola and the government's response on Friday. I mean, he's coming in from the campaign field and bringing some of his colleagues on both sides, I presume, in right. to look at this issue. And so I thought, well, that's kind of weird because the Senate should be looking at it. First of all, I thought it was odd that an Appropriations Committee and not a Health Oversight Committee was looking at it. And I also thought it was weird that they were waiting so long. I mean, it's 3 weeks away.
It is. Now, to be fair to the Senate, they had the first hearing that I was aware of about 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was a joint hearing by the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee and the Appropriations Subcommittee that funds HHS, conveniently both chaired by the same guy, Tom Harkin, Democrat of Iowa, retiring this year. And he actually had a pretty high-profile hearing that actually took place, as I recall, the same day the president went down to the CDC and essentially went on camera about Ebola for the first time. So what this is about with Senator Mikulski is, with each passing day, I think Congress wants to go beyond being politically involved, which is to say they're making members of Congress, especially those in tight races, they're making political noise out of this talk of a travel ban. But after the election, there's going to be presumably some serious discussion about whether does the United States need to spend more money on this as part of a supplemental or as part of the year-ending omnibus or CR or whatever we end up doing at the end of the year. And that's, of course, where Barbara Mikulski comes in.
The money part of this is the part, as you rightfully point out, that we haven't thought that much about yet. I mean, we see information from the Department of Defense about how much they're spending how much they have spent so far in some of the operations that they're standing up in Africa, just as we see information about how much they're spending on the airstrikes in Iraq and Syria. But where that money comes from, the structure under that Congress puts in place to make sure that spending can happen is the piece of this that we have not learned that much about. And so in that respect, as you call attention to it, it does make more sense that the Appropriations Committee takes this up. Do we have any sense that the House will do the same thing anytime soon?
We do not. I haven't heard anything from that side. So far, the money that has been spent to do that DOD part that you just referred to has been done through the fine art of reprogramming, which if any audience knows what reprogramming is all about, it's probably the people listening to us right now, which is this process whereby one of the departments, if they get the sign-off from the chairman and ranking members of each of the two appropriations subcommittees, and in some cases the relevant subcommittees, they can actually take money that's been appropriated for one purpose and shift it to something else that's considered more urgent. And so far, the DOD has been able to get that reprogramming permission granted, by taking money from another acronym that they use at the Pentagon, OCO, Contingency Operations, which is essentially the fancy acronym for fighting wars. They've been able to take that and reprogramming. I think it's been, 700 million? Maybe two tranches of 700 million each. More than $1 billion, I think.
So the numbers that we are spending on that is kind of the goal that Senator Mikulski is setting from the looks of it, just to understand the mechanics behind it.
I think the mechanics behind it, obviously, she Senator Mikulski, keenly interested from both a policymaking perspective and a parochial perspective in what role NIH, which is in Bethesda, has in this. I mean, this is, you know, if you're the senator who's the chairman of the Appropriations Committee and NIH is in your home state, then
you probably want to take a look.
You probably want to take a close look at whether NIH has everything it needs to do whatever research it might possibly do.
Are we getting any sense on anything else having to do with the appropriations process? Any hints of Senator Mikulski's staff and Congressman Rogers' staff on the House side doing anything else about appropriations or agency funding or anything?
No broader, nothing than the sort of broad hints we've talked about a couple of weeks ago, which is, you know, it's a safe assumption that they are not letting the work products go to waste that they've already generated, the bills that have been marked up in the Senate side and that have passed on the House side or gone through Appropriations Committee on the House side. Presumably there is, and we're relatively confident that there is some staff work trying to see where are the easy ways to blend those things together so that they can narrow the list of differences for the lame duck members when they come back on Wednesday, November 12th.
David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call and hosts the Hawkins Here blog, and host prerogative here because we're not normally, we don't focus on politics a lot, but you wrote a terrific column titled Voter Engagement Gap, Hints at GOP Turnout Edge. And the reason I like it is because it reflects numbers and not just what some buddy thinks that is going to happen just based on information they've pulled out from between their ears. What we're learning, or what I learned from your column, is that there are, among the folks who potentially will go and vote in a couple of weeks, there is one side that seems more excited about it, motivated to go do it, than the other side. Am I reading it right?
You are reading it right, and that is the Republican side. And I wrote the piece that you referred to a few days ago. Since then, there have been two or three other national polls that have all come to the same conclusion, which is the Republican, generally the pollsters ask such questions as, are you very excited about this year's election? Are you highly motivated to go vote? Do you have a firm opinion as to what we should be doing? It's things that try to tease out as voter engagement, voter excitement. And on all those questions, on all these polls, I wrote about two of them. There have been at least two more since I wrote this piece. They are all saying the same thing, which is that Republicans are more excited to go to the polls. So that while sometimes voters ask a generic question, which party do you think should control Congress, or which party do you plan on voting for Congress? On those, in some the Republicans have a narrow edge, in some the Democrats, in some it's a statistical tie. But on every time they talk about voter engagement, it's the Republicans that seem more ginned up and excited about actually getting to the polls and voting. And of course, in a tight election, that could make the difference.
And the reason that this is important, for folks in the executive branch, is the men and women that they have to answer to as chairs of committees and subcommittees on the Senate side could look dramatically different next year than it looks today. We just talked about Senator Mikulski. She may not be the chair of that committee, at least for the future. She will be when that hearing takes place after the election.
That's right.
But she might not be a month and a half after that.
She might not. Now, not to get too down in the weeds, but people who are listening should be aware that there's a possibility that the control of the Senate might not actually be decided until December, if not actually January 6th, the day the new Congress is likely to convene, because there are two tight Senate races in southern states where the rules are that you have to win an absolute majority to win. And in both those cases, it's possible, if not probable, that neither of the major party candidates will have an absolute majority. Neither the election in Louisiana between Mary Landrieu, an appropriator, or Bill Cassidy, a congressman, the Republican. There's a libertarian in that one who may drain enough votes away that there'd be a second round, a sort of playoff in December. And then in Georgia, an open seat, fight between a businessman named David Perdue and Michelle Nunn, the daughter of the former chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. There's another third-party candidate in that one. If there's a runoff in that one, it wouldn't be till January 6th, as I say, the first day of the new Congress. So by way of running up to the fact that we may not know whether it's going to be Mikulski for another 2 years or Thad Cochran making his comeback to the chairmanship of that committee after some time away, the Republican who, having gotten through his difficult primary in Mississippi, is now pretty much a lock to win re-election.
I went back and looked at the column that you wrote a couple of months back about what that chairmanship panel would look like, what the landscape would look like.
Right.
I guess if I'm at an agency, I take some comfort in the fact that the people who look ready to go into a number of these slots are people who have either chaired that committee before, as you mentioned Cochran just did, and as it appears that Senator Collins would do, and going back to Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs.
That's right.
Or know the issues well enough. For example, Senator McCain would likely get the Armed Services Committee chairmanship, and he's been ranking members since pretty much the entire time that the Republicans have been in the minority.
I think that's right. I think there's a sort of a storyline out there that suggests that there's been so much turnover in Congress that the place is going to be run by people without experience. And I think that is not the case when it comes to these chairmanships. If you have that story in front of you, I don't. I think from memory, you've got Collins, who would need to decide whether to go back to Homeland. You've got John McCain, obviously a serious player on Armed Services. One person I left off, but now I'm told might may change his mind, is Mike Enzi at the Health, Education, Labor, Pensions Committee. He has a couple of years left. Of course, Orrin Hatch knows how to do the Finance Committee. The list goes on. So there's a lot of depth still. Even though, yes, a majority of the Republicans in the Senate have never known what it's like to be in the majority before. There are still plenty of Republicans who've been around long enough that they've at least chaired subcommittees, if not full committees, in the past.
I'm looking at your column, and it's got Grassley at Justice.
Correct.
Judiciary, yep. Excuse me. And you mentioned the others, Hatch at Finance Committee, and he would also be President Pro Tem, third in line for the White House.
Right.
We're just going to, I guess, sit here, chew our nails with everybody else, and keep watching the polls come in.
Yep, keep watching the polls come in, and... And remembering the way to do it on election night, I would say, is you got to be able to count up six Republican takeaways from the Democrats, and at the moment you can only count on really two, West Virginia and Montana, and from then on you got to just sort of watch carefully. But yes, I would say for an agency employee, this has real meaning. I mean, this is not just sort of the goofy parlor game of Washington. This actually will make a difference potentially into how you do your job for the next 2 years.